Power Records presents...
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of the Power Records podcast, where the action comes alive. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm one of your hosts, Rob Kelly, and joining me as always is...
Chris Franklin.
Chris, it's exciting. We're back doing another episode of the Power Records podcast. For some reason, the time just seems to slip away in between these episodes, because at the end of every show, we make a promise to ourselves we're going to do these more often, and we mean it. We mean it, everybody. And then before we know it, 3 months have gone by. I don't know how that happens every time, but we are back here, at least this time, for the Power Records podcast.
I blame Richard Pryor this time right now. That's who I'm blaming.
Probably, yeah. We are kind of hip deep in Superman, the morass that is Superman 3. So we have been busy over there talking that movie over on another one of our shows. But we're here. We're back. And this time we're talking about The Incredible Hulk. And an equally incredible fact is, if you can believe this, Chris, in 26 episodes of the Power Records podcast, we have talked about the Hulk one time. That's it. Wow. I cannot believe it, considering he is probably the second biggest Marvel star, and the Power Records were in business right when the Hulk was at the apex of his popularity. But for some reason, we've only ever done the one Hulk record, which was the Hulk at Bay book and record set where he takes on the Abomination. But of course, there were other Hulk stories, so we're here to talk about two of them. Now, before we get to the stories in question, I want to ask you, Chris, I mean, we've been recording together for 5 years now, actually a little longer than that, and it's kind of amazing. I don't think we ever really have talked about the Hulk too terribly much together. So, like, where is the Hulk in your personal fandom? I know how much you love Captain America and Batman and Robin, but where is the Hulk? Did you love the Hulk growing up? Do you like him now? Like, where are you on him?
Oh yeah, you know, the for me the Hulk was the TV series. It was the Bill Bixby, Lou Ferrigno TV series, which is a good thing for this episode, which we'll get into. But that was my. I think I was aware that the Hulk was a Marvel comic book character because I had a Spidey Super Stories that had the Hulk in it early on, and I think for some reason I remember being confused that the Hulk and Bigfoot were the same character at one point.
Okay.
When I was real little, and for some reason I remember my sister going, "No, Bigfoot's like Harry and the Hulk's green." And so, and you know, when the TV show, I don't know if I caught the pilot movie when it first aired, but at some point I would watch the TV show, and I was one of those many kids that loved it when he changed into the Hulk but didn't want to watch it when he changed into the Hulk. So I
there's a lot of mobsters going on in the show. There's a lot of Bruce Banner just walking around talking to people and stuff.
Right, but I would, you know, when he hulked out, I would hide my eyes. When his eyes turned that pale white, green, whatever they were, Bill Bixby put those damn contacts in he didn't like, I would, you know, hide my eyes. And when he was changed, I was fine. And then when I got older, just a few years later, you know, before the show went off the air, that was my favorite part to watch, you know.
Sure,
so,
sure.
But yeah, but, you know, I kind of got into reading some Hulk, you know, comics and picking up, for some reason, I had more of the reprint, like the Marvel Super Heroes, the reprint series that was a lot of the Herb Trimpe, you know, early 70s Roy Thomas stuff. And so I was into that. And then the Hulk cartoon that came on with Spider-Man and his amazing friends. I thought that was pretty good too. So yeah, I've always liked the Hulk. I had a buddy that was really big in during the Peter David era. So I would like read his issues. I don't have a lot of Hulk comics in my possession, but I've read quite a few Hulk comics over the years. And I like the early, if of the comics, I like the early Jack Kirby flathead Hulk. I like that. I like that look. So
you must have had the Mego doll, surely.
Oh yeah, yeah. I had the Mego Hulk, and I had the Energized Remco Energized Hulk, and I think I had the Hulk. I had a Pocket Superheroes Mego Hulk, and I think I had. I know I had the Spider-Man bank that was made by Renzi, that made the Spider-Man bank and Halloween pails. So I had quite a few Hulk bits of Hulk merchandise, because as you said, this was this was the heyday of Hulk merchandise. Suddenly Captain America was like kicked to the curb the number two guy. And then the Hulk was the number two guy. And if there's a room for a third guy, then Cap was the third guy.
Yeah, I always loved the Hulk. He was one of my favorite characters as a kid. I mentioned on probably one other episode of Mountain Comics, maybe, where like I got the regular Hulk comic and I got Marvel Superheroes because it was, you know, those are like you just talked about. Those were reprints. So those were stories I had never read. So it was like getting the Hulk twice a month. And then I would get the Defenders on top of it where he was in that book. So I was all hooked out, you know, I mean, I had the Mego doll certainly. And I watched the TV show on Friday night. So I was big in on the Hulk. And he was always one of my favorites. It is astounding to me. Well, you know, we're going to talk about it in a moment of like why, for how big he must have been. He really doesn't appear that much in the Power Record stable, which is strange, but we're going to get to all that in a moment. But first, we have to thank our sponsor. This episode of the Power Records podcast is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 45% off with free shipping for orders of $50 or more. So, Chris, what do you got?
I've got Marvel Masterworks Incredible Hulk Hardcover Volume 15. It's written by Roger Stern and others and has art by Sal Buscema, Bob Layton, and others. It says Roger Stern brings his timeless Hulk run to a close with an incredible finish with Hulk icon Sal Buscema at the drawing board. Old Jay Jaws gets wound up in an epic four-issue struggle with Machine Man that'll test the limits of both man and, well, machine. The high-tech thief Gold Bug is searching for a lost city of gold and needs the Hulk to find it. But what is his connection to the enigmatic, I can't say that word, they who wield the power? And can Hulk stand up to a foe even bigger than he is? Find out when he takes on it, the Living Colossus. So you know that's good. Plus, it's Hulk versus Canadian heavyweight Sasquatch. Oh, see there, maybe that's where my confusion came in.
Right, there you go, yeah.
And one extra sized annual, and the legendary Steve Ditko is on hand to draw another. So Steve Ditko back on the Hulk. There you go. Collecting the Incredible Hulk, the 1968 series. These are 70s, 80s issues 234 through 244. Annual number 8 through 9 in material from Marvel Treasury Edition.
Hey.
Number 20 and 24. And the original price was $75. At in-stock trades, you save 42%, and it's $43.50. So there you go.
Good deal. It's a big old slab of Hulk. So you mentioned Sal Buscema, and that leads in perfectly to my selection, which is Sal Buscema, Comics' Fast and Furious Artist, which is a Tomorrow's book written by Eric Nolan Wethington and Jim Amash. And it's all about Sal Buscema, who, of course, had a 10-year run on The Incredible Hulk. 10 years. Ten years. Think about nowadays, you know, an artist does six issues and it's like, wow, what a run. You know, it's like 10. He did a solid decade on The Incredible Hulk.
He drew the Hulk longer than you've had to put up with Shag so far.
It doesn't feel like that, but I guess that's accurate. And he drew over 100 consecutive issues of Spectacular Spider-Man. I mean, wow. You know, and in a lot of ways, as much as I love other artists on the Hulk, Herb Trimpe, that you mentioned, John Byrne's brief run I loved on The Incredible Hulk, there is something, like, to me, when I picture the Hulk in a comic, it's Sal Buscema's Hulk that I picture. So this book is all about the man and his career, which sounds really fascinating. Like I mentioned, it's from Tomorrow's. The normal price is $26.95. In-stock trades price is only $16.17. You save 40%. Anybody who's ever read any of these Tomorrow's books knows how highly entertaining they are. So give this one a try. Sal Buscema, Comics Fast and Furious Artist. So for these and all your other trade paperback needs, please visit InStockTrades.com, and we thank them for their support. All right, so we're going to be talking about two adventures from this Untitled Hulk LP that came out around 1978. The copyright dates on these things are always a little dodgy. The two stories we're going to be talking about are from side one of this record, Black Chasm and Monster from the Deep. But before we get to these stories, we do want to talk a little bit about Incredible Hulk as a Power Records star. Now, considering that he was a TV star right when Power Records was pumping out these records, it's surprising how little he really got, how much action he got from Power Records. He got this solo record, which featured four solo stories, and he got the book and record, which was The Hulk at Bay, and that's it. There were no other Hulk stories. Batman got like five records. Superman got like five records. Spider-Man got multiple records, even though he was only on TV occasionally. You would think there'd be a lot more Hulk records, considering he was a bona fide TV star. And they didn't even repurpose the Hulk that much. There were no Hulk 45s. You know, the way Power Records would put out just the record in a 45 sleeve. Those, as far as I know, do not exist. And the only time that his stuff was repurposed was his they did two Spider-Man LPs, Spider-Man and his friends LPs. One featured three stories, and the Hulk story was cut, which is weird. Again, they put Captain America and the Fantastic Four on there. And then they did one with four stories where they did all four, the Mark of the Man-Wolf, Phoenix Shall Arise, Hulk at Bay, and the Fantastic Four origin story. But that was pretty much it. And the only other format he got repurposed on was they did, in fact, do Hulk on cassettes. Power Records got into cassettes in the early 80s. Those are kind of hard to find. And I was never able to, for the longest time, I was never able to find any proof of it. But then I went on eBay and I found somebody selling the Hulk, this record as a cassette, just the cassette though. No card. I don't know who would buy this thing, like just a cassette. But nevertheless, it does exist. And you can see from the pictures, it says Black Chasm and Monster from the Deep from Side One. Presumably it's the other stories from Side Two. But doesn't that seem shocking that considering Marvel, he was by far their biggest star, and yet Power Records really didn't do that much with him?
I guess a part of it comes from that Power Records was their new content with DC and Marvel was kind of winding down as the Hulk gained popularity. I mean, his biggest heyday was really in that 1978 through 1980, it seems like, mm-hmm. So maybe that's it. Maybe that's why. But yeah, it does seem really odd because, I know Mego, at first the Hulk figure didn't sell that well, but as soon as that TV show came on,
right,
man, they started selling Hulks by the case and they put them in every format they could think of,
And there's like a stretchable Hulk and the 12-inch Hulk. Yeah. I had the 12-inch Hulk as well.
Yeah. And they're all really cool. And then absurd things like, Empire making Hulk vans and helicopters and things like that. So
I had the Hulk van. I had the Hulk like Matchbox van. It was like a white van with a Hulk painted on the side, as of course seen in the TV show and comic book.
Yeah, exactly. That's what Bruce Banner drives or David Banner drives around in. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Hey, everybody. You looking for me? I'm right here. My Hulk van.
McGee would kind of figure that out, I think.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Yeah. I think he's there. The only other thing I could find, which was intriguing to me, and I sent you this link, was on eBay. Again, I found this record simply titled Superheroes, and it looks like it's Spanish language. And on the cover are five pieces of stock art. There's a Gil Kane Spider-Man, a Jack Kirby Captain America, a Jack Kirby, I think, Thor, and then you've got a Hulk, that running pose, and then Spider-Woman. And now this record is currently on eBay for $90, which means I'm not buying it. But I'm dying to find out what this record is. Like, when did they ever do Spider-Woman or Thor audio adventures? I'm completely unfamiliar with that, but it's the record is gorgeous looking. Like, the sleeve art is really great. So if I can ever find this for less money than $90, I will have to pick it up. I'm betting they're all in Spanish language, which means I wouldn't understand any of them. But at least the Hulk does appear there. I mean, again, outside of the records, he was on, as you mentioned, he was on everything. He was everywhere. Yeah. You couldn't turn away from how much Hulk merchandise was out there. And yet, Power Records was still doing some original recordings into the 80s. I mean, they did the Conan the Barbarian movie adaptation. Maybe the TV show wasn't. I don't know. Maybe this Hulk record didn't sell that well. And they were like, meh, kids don't want to hear the Hulk records. I don't know. But
if they figure they can't see him, he's such a strong visual that they can't, I don't know. It's a good point. But I mean, I'm looking at the record, the label on the record itself, it says El Incredible Hulk. So there's an actual Hulk story on here.
Yeah.
It says H. Saban, so I wonder if that's the Saban that literally is in Shuki Yu. I wonder if that's the Saban and Shuki Levy that did the, you know, the Power Rangers and all the theme songs.
Oh, right. Saban. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I wonder if that's them. I wonder if they were involved in this. That I'd like to know more about this now that I'm looking at this. And there apparently is my Spanish is horrible, but this is Mujer Arana, which I guess is Spider-Woman.
Yeah,
there's a Spider-Woman story or song or something on this record, so they didn't just slap her on the label, you know, which Marvel tried to make Spider-Woman a big thing.
She had the cartoon show,
and, I mean, they tried to make her their Wonder Woman. It's like, you know, Marvel has struggled until the MCU with, like you know, now they've got, like, a ton of female characters. It's like, we got Black Widow and we've got Scarlet Witch and the Wasp and all the
Gamora and
Captain Marvel and all the so now they've got a ton, but they struggled. They tried She-Hulk, they tried Spider-Woman, and nobody really stuck as their Wonder Woman for a long time. So
you remember those two-page center spread ads that both DC and Marvel had for the contests? It was like
the Clark candy bar.
And, like, you know, the DC ad was the Big Five, the Super Friends.
Yeah.
And then the Marvel was Captain America, Spider-Man, Hulk. Who was the fourth? There was I'm blanking on who the fourth one was. And then Spider-Woman. And even
as
a kid, I was like, wait a minute. Spider-Woman's not, you know, like, I kind of was like, is she really that big? I don't know about that. But, they tried. Yeah. They definitely tried.
Yeah, they didn't. I mean, you know, I would say, up to a point that the Invisible Girl was their most prominent female character. But if you included her without the rest of Fantastic Four, it was just kind of weird, I guess, you know.
But yeah, but you know what? Hold on. I'm conflating two different things, because the Clark bar ad, because I'm looking at it now, was Spider-Man, Cap, Hulk, Thing, and Red Sonja. Which is even more
mind-boggling. A character they don't really own. Yeah.
No, right. A character they don't even own. But I do remember that there was another, I think it was a 7-Eleven tie-in that had Spider-Woman on it. Slurpee Cups tie-in. And I remember just being like, is she really that big of a thing? I don't know. But anyway, we're getting off the subject of the Incredible Hulk here. So, okay.
I will say on this album that you sent me a link that our buddy Sean Ross will love it, because Mad Bomb Cap's on it, you know, from the Mad Bomb issue with Jack Kirby, you know, Jack Kirby's back, King Kirby's back. I got a t-shirt like that. That's all.
So, all right. So before we get to the first story, which is Black Chasm, let's talk about the cover art. It's this shot of the Hulk, and he is running amok, punching a bunch of regular people. There's a guy with an eye patch shooting at him, looking kind of angry. We don't really get the context. I mean, these are, you know, presumably kind of bad guys. Wearing an eye patch doesn't mean you're a bad guy. And the Hulk is rampaging, so, I mean, the guy kind of is justified for maybe shooting at the Hulk. And it says, here for exciting all-new action-adventure stories. It's uncredited, but I think it's pretty clear this is Rich Buckler's work.
Yeah, it's definitely – it looks like Rich Buckler or somebody at Continuity Studios. It's definitely of that Neil Adams-type ilk. But, yeah, it's not Neil Adams. So, yeah, Rich Buckler's a really good guess. I think you're probably right.
Yeah, he did a lot of work for Power Records. And then on the back sleeve, there's four panels, and it has little representations of what you're going to see from each story. Blind Alley, Monster from the Deep, the Assassin, and Black Chasm. And, you know, we'll hear these in the stories, but you'll notice that there are no supervillains to be found in any of these stories. This is Hulk just kind of smashing stuff and beating up puny humans. But for some reason, no supervillains here at all. Which
I wonder why they do that. I wonder if there's another popular version of the Hulk where there's never any supervillains.
I don't know. Well, you know what? Let's all find out together, everybody. We're going to listen to, as I said, the first two stories from this record. And in fact, what we're going to do is we're going to play both stories back to back, because Chris and I mean, I don't know about you, Chris. I don't have like a ton to say about these stories, because I think they're a little on the dull side. Maybe, you know, you might disagree with me, and I'm eager to find out. But we're going to play both stories back to back, Black Chasm and Monster from the Deep. And then we will come back and comment on both of them. So sit back, enjoy, everybody. We're going to start with the first story from this record called Black Chasm.
Ego of Dr. David Banner, the Hulk, the The other side of the coin, the raging soul of an otherwise peaceful man, the Incredible Hulk. Huge, powerful, unthinking, destructive, wanted for murder. David Bruce Banner, gentle physician and healer, now a fugitive from himself, living in the shadow of the monster within, forever fearful of its next outburst of violence, desperate in his search for an answer, a cure.
There's got to be a way. I can't go on like this, a prisoner of my own emotions.
For it is anger which triggers the altered molecular mechanism within his body that turns the gentle physician into a rampaging monster.
I can't go on forever wondering if there's a killer within me, never knowing where or when he might emerge, forever hiding my true identity.
David Bruce Banner, calling himself David Benson, man on the run, on the road to everywhere, searching, always searching.
Okay, Benson, this is as far as I go.
Thanks a lot. Johnville, huh?
Coal mining town. Ain't much to look at, but you might find a job here.
Well, thanks again. Mr. Jason?
That's me.
Somebody said you had a job opening.
Yeah, the payroll department. Could use someone.
Well, my name's Benson. David Benson.
This is my daughter, Betty.
Hi.
How do you do?
And this is Keith Moore, our general manager. You'd be working for him if you qualified.
Mr. Moore?
You had any experience in accounting, Benson?
No, not exactly, but I've got a college degree.
What field?
Chemistry.
That doesn't mean you can figure payroll.
Keith, darling, if Mr. Benson knows chemistry, I'm sure he's good with figures.
The job's temporary.
Well, that's okay with me.
All right. What do you say, Keith?
It's your call, mine.
You're on, Benson. Keith will show you around and what to do.
Keith?
Yeah, Benson?
Well, I was looking through this ledger and...
Give me that book.
I was just going to point out that...
These aren't the accounts you're supposed to be working on.
Well, there seems to be some discrepancy
These books aren't part of your job. Do I make myself clear?
Okay.
Sorry, but I'm uptight today. Just get back on these payroll forms, will you?
Sure.
Lunch, Keith?
Not now, Betty. I think I'll work through.
How about you, David?
Yeah, sure. That sounds good, Miss Jason.
The name's Betty. Come on, I'll show you the great little drab town of Johnville.
So that about sums it up. Car was on fire. I was able to escape, but my wife was trapped. I couldn't get her out. She died.
I'm sorry, David.
Ever since that day, I thought if only I had that superhuman strength, that surge of untapped energy that comes in time of crisis. If I'd had that, I might have saved her.
Don't torture yourself, David. Nobody has that kind of brute strength. To be able to turn over a flaming automobile with his bare hands.
Some do.
Name one.
The Hulk.
Who?
I don't know. What did I say?
Hulk? Bulk? Something like that.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know why I said that. I can't remember.
David, are you all right?
Huh? Sure. I'm fine. Don't mind me. Sometimes I get absent-minded, like the proverbial professor. Let's order, shall we?
For David Bruce Banner, the Hulk is a shadow. A dark, forbidding shape existing deep in his mind. He is aware but cannot remember. He suspects but cannot prove. He lives in constant fear of this unknown being within him. The Hulk. The horrible result of David Banner's experiments with gamma rays when he tried to find superhuman strength. Now that he possesses it, it has become a nightmare.
What about you, Betty?
Very simple, very fast. I'm the daughter of a coal miner. A nice guy, my father, but not very successful. So I help him with the mine. And here I am, stranded in drab little Johnville.
How's the mine doing?
Not very well.
Losing money?
No matter how much coal we mine, the profits never seem to go up. Dad's even thinking of closing down. Why, David?
Well, nothing. Just wondered, that's all.
What do you want, Benson?
Look, I haven't said anything to Betty or to Mr. Jason.
What are you talking about?
The other ledger. The double set of books.
Are you out of your mind?
Moore, I'm not an accountant, but even a kid could figure that you're bilking the mine, stealing the Jasons blind.
You are bonkers.
Am I? Betty's a nice girl, thinking about marrying you. The old man looks on you like a son.
So?
Maybe you have time to save yourself, Keith.
How would I go about that?
Restitution. Put the money back. They'd never know.
I was doing it for their own good, you know.
Come on, Keith.
I'm not kidding, Benson. The least you can do is hear me out.
All right, I'm listening.
Jason's an old man. He's lost his touch, doesn't care anymore. Betty never knew much about mining anyway. Wasn't interested. There's an old section of the mine, tunneled by Jason's grandfather before the turn of the century. It's full of high-grade anthracite. I've been putting the money there, improving it. I know it'll pay off.
Why haven't you told them?
They were against it from the start. They think it's mined out, but I know it isn't.
Will all this expense show up in the books?
Sure. Better than that, let me show you the mine.
But...
wait till you see that coal. Pure anthracite. Come on. It's only a little way. About a mile out. Over here, Benson.
I thought you said you were improving this place.
That's what I said.
And these are port timbers. They're rotted.
Not up ahead.
You've been repairing from the inside out?
That's where the anthracite is.
Wouldn't it be safer to reconstruct from the mine entrance?
The overhead beams aren't that bad. They'll hold. Come on. You have to see this. Black gold.
More. More. More, where are you?
Over here.
The lights went out.
I know.
You got a flashlight?
Of course.
I can't see it, More. Where?
Over here. Just follow me.
I can't see you, More.
Over here, Banner. See? Over here.
More, cut the kidding.
Just follow me. Pied Piper, right?
More. More, where are you? Turn on your light. More.
I know this mine like the back of my own hand, Benson. I don't need a light. Just follow my footsteps. These overheads are pretty weak. I think if I kick one, like this... why, I think the whole place might cave in. Where are you, Benson? Where are you now?
Behind these rocks. What have you done? You've trapped me. More!
You didn't really think there was any coal left in this old shaft, did you? The Jasons are stupid people, Benson. Trusting people. Pretty soon they'll learn their lesson. When they're broke and I own the mine.
You're gonna leave me here?
You got it. Nobody will ever know. This mine hasn't had a foot set in it in over 50 years. Enjoy yourself, Benson. Find some coal while you're waiting. If you can find any.
David Bruce Banner, trapped in a remote coal mine, sealed in a natural tomb, the air becoming close, stifling, the underground waters rising. But within the peaceful man, the rampaging monster breaks his bonds. Ice-cold anger turns to raging fury. And from the blazing fury there emerges the Hulk. Huge, massive, a towering juggernaut, the Hulk strikes out at everything around him. Walls crumble, timbers snap, crack, great boulders are thrown like small pebbles as the Hulk rampages through the mine. Charging through the tunnels like a roaring tank, the Hulk overtakes Keith Moore. More, the Hulk makes for the mine entrance, destroying everything in his path. Timbers fall behind him. Great rocks crash to the ground. Ceilings cave in.
I'm trapped! Save me! Don't leave me! Come back!
Reaching the mine entrance, the Hulk staggers into the sunlight, breathing air in great gulps. And then, skulks away into the hills.
They find him yet?
Yeah, way down the shaft, out of his head, raving about some monster.
I'm sorry, Mr. Jason. He was like a son to you, wasn't he?
Sort of, yeah. I knew him a long time. Can't figure out what he was doing down in that old shaft. We had it closed as unsafe.
He say anything to you about going in there, David?
He did mention something about reopening it. The anthracite there, he said. After that, I don't remember.
Well, he was wrong about that. That was mined out years ago. They say it was the Hulk that caused the collapse.
The Hulk?
Some kind of monster. People dream up the weirdest things. You're welcome to stay on, Benson. I'll be needing a new manager, and you seem to know your onions.
That's nice of you, Mr. Jason, but I think I'll be moving on.
Where to, David?
I don't know. Anywhere, everywhere. I can't seem to stay in one place very long.
Well, suit yourself. Excuse me. Hey, Charlie, see you a minute?
What are you looking for, David?
Huh?
What are you after? What are you searching for?
I don't know, Betty. Myself, maybe, or peace. I don't know.
It's a summer day at Stewart's Bay. A small fishing village. David Banner stands at the end of a dock, breathing fresh sea air.
Morning.
Great day.
Let's hope it holds.
Going out?
Yeah, that's my baby, Bosun 3.
Nice boat.
You new around here?
Yes.
Working?
Not yet,
Good.
Huh?
My second mate's laid up in the hospital. Why don't you sign on for a couple of weeks?
I don't know very much about fishing.
You got muscle. You can haul a net, crank a winch.
Oh, sure, but I...
Okay, that's all that's needed. My name's Steve Jager.
David Benson.
Come aboard. This is my first mate.
Hi.
A pleasure, Ms...
Mrs., I'm Judy Jager. How do you want your eggs? Once over or sunny side?
Any way at all.
Once over and three for me. Come on, Dave, I'll show you around. We'll be drawing up our nets later on. This winch...
How's the fishing been on the whole?
Not too good. Between the foreign fleets and the pollution, I think Stewart's Bay has added.
But the new 200-mile limit should...
Don't believe everything you read, Dave. They're still coming in.
Well, that's poaching.
That's what they call it. The pollution's worse, though.
Plus a few other things.
What?
Stick around for a while. You'll find out. Those are the nets up ahead. Oh, my God.
The lines have been cut.
It's him again, Steve.
This is it, Judy. I'm going to beat his brains in.
What good would that do? Anyway, you might get your own beat in first. He's a lot bigger than you. What we need is proof, evidence, something to take him to court on.
What's this all about? Who cut your nets?
Jack Mayo.
Mayo?
We'll tell you all about it later. The catch is gone. Might as well head in.
Going to marry me. Fat chance. When I married Steve, Mayo started carrying the torch. It turned into a blazing fire.
You think he's responsible for the nets?
More than that. Poaching our catch, cutting across our lines when we trawl, sabotaging our engine at night.
But you can't prove it.
Not the sneaky stuff. And when he cuts over our lines, he laughs and says it was an accident. Look, it's Mayo. Watch it, Steve.
He's trying to swamp us.
Almost did it. Another few feet and we'd be over.
Likeable sort, isn't he? That his boat?
Yellowtail. Fastest sports fisherman in the harbor. He owns it with Freddie Fuller. Judy, this is it. I'm going to beat up on that guy.
Over my dead body, you will. You think I want a dead husband?
Later, at the dock.
Dave, you seen Steve?
No.
I can't find him anyplace. I just hope he didn't lose his head and go after Jack Mayo.
Where would he look for Mayo?
He hangs out at the sea shanty.
I'll check it out.
I repeat,
Just a Coke, please. Has Steve Jager been here?
Haven't seen him.
Who's looking for him?
I am.
Who's you?
The name's Benson. And you're Mayo.
He knows my name, Freddy.
I've seen him before.
Yeah. Ain't we seen you before?
Earlier today. I was aboard Bosun 3 when you tried to swamp us.
Listen to that, Freddy. Swamp him.
I don't think it's very funny, Mayo.
I do.
It was an accident, Benson.
Yeah, an accident.
Like the net mines.
What net lines?
You cut them.
Can you prove it?
No, but...
You looking to fight, mister?
Take it easy, Jack.
Yeah, why don't you cool it, Mayo? Lay off on Steve and Judy. They're just trying to make a living just like you. You lost the girl, take it like a man.
You are looking for a fight, ain't you?
I told you no, I don't want to fight, and I don't lose my temper easily. I'm only
I lose my temper when somebody tells me what to do, how to live. Nobody minds my business but myself.
Cool it, will you, Jack? There's people in
here. Shut up! You get out of here, Benson.
Do what he says, will you?
I can see I'm not welcome.
No, you ain't. And one more thing, Benson. If I ever see you again, I'll make sure your flag flies at half-mast.
I can't figure out what's wrong with him.
More of Jack Mayo's work, if you ask me.
The alarm was separate. He knows how to get around a ship's alarm.
Why don't we leave it for a while, Steve? I'm starved.
Okay. Want to join us at the diner, Dave?
No, thanks. I'd like to monkey with the engine for a while. I think the timing's off.
Think you can fix it?
Well, I'm pretty good with mechanical things.
Okay, join us later.
Fine. Listen, can I take her out for a test run? It might also be the fuel line.
Can you cast off and dock her alone?
Sure.
Okay, you get your sea legs. Come on, Judy.
Sounds okay so far. Maybe it... What now? It's got to be the fuel line. It's got to be. Boat coming this way. Uh-oh. It's Mayo.
How you doing, Olsen?
He almost swamped me. Mayo! He's coming back straight at me. Inches. You're trying to sink me, Mayo.
I told you, Benson, next time I see you, I'm gonna fly you at half mast.
Mayo, what are you doing?
Looks like Bosun's gonna need a new running light, Freddy.
How about that radar antenna?
Yeah, how about that?
Have you gone crazy, Mayo?
Hey, Freddy, maybe if I put some shots into the hull, she'll sink.
Boats with holes usually do.
You can't do this, Mayo. The Jagers are good people. You can't destroy their boat.
I told you I'm gonna fly you at half mast. Hey, where is he?
I saw him dive into the water.
Maybe he'll drown, you know. Just an accident.
As the enraged David Banner dives into the sea and sinks into the blue-green depths, his features contort, change, take on the aspect of utter fury and rage. His muscles bulge, his chest expands, his sinews contract in a great effort, and he zooms to the surface like a great angry shark, exploding into the air in a burst of wrath and vengeance.
What the devil's that?
I don't know.
Let's get out of here.
Knifing through the water like some great monster from the deep, the raging giant swims toward Yellowtail.
Fuller, get the shark rifle!
I can't find it!
Well, look under the forward hatch and hurry up! I don't know what this thing is, but we gotta kill it!
The screaming thing comes nearer, eyes full of fury, hate in its soul. The Hulk! Coming up from beneath Yellowtail's hull, the Hulk tears at the wood plank, rips the keel, and then... curls it into the air. Turning, the Hulk sinks into the sea, where in the silent depths he again becomes David Banner, man of no memory, unaware, unknowing of what he has done. Slowly, Banner rises to the surface and swims to the Bosun 3.
What did they say it was?
Some kind of sea monster. Imagine that. The Stewart's Bay monster, like Loch Ness, huh?
If you ask me, both Mayo and Fuller were seeing things.
Maybe, but they're both changed men. I can swear to that. Meek. I never saw two guys so meek. Maybe there is a monster out there.
There are monsters everywhere. Monsters of the soul.
Huh?
Nothing. Just a thought.
And that was Black Chasm and Monster from the Deep from the, aforementioned, Incredible Hulk LP. So overall, Chris, what was your impression of these stories? Let's start with Black Chasm. What did you think of Black Chasm?
I think in the case of both of these feel like they could very well be episodes from the Bixby Ferrigno TV series, the Kenneth Johnson TV series. I think they captured the feel of that show. I mean, I could definitely see, you know, Bill Bixby in these situations. The one time it kind of pulled me out of that is whoever they got doing the voice of the Hulk when he holds out, he sounds more like Peter Boyle in Young Frankenstein. or, you know, a really angry Barney Gumble from The Simpsons. It's like sticking in my veins, you know.
It begins.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's the Hulk. It's not this deep guttural. You know, it's more like. You know, it's just I couldn't help but kind of chuckle every time the Hulk yelled. But other than that, of course, the acting's really good. The sound effects, it really does paint the picture of where you're at, and the story's really well told. And I did catch one thing: the Moor guy who traps David. Of course, he's David because this is off the TV show.
Can't call him Bruce. Nope, can't call him Bruce.
Don't call him Bruce. No, because Bruce is a sissy name according to whoever it was that said on the TV.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
But it means manly, but it's a sissy name. But anyway, the guy, the Moor calls him Banner when he shouldn't know he's David Banner. He's David Benson as far as he knows, and they don't indicate that he's figured out who he really is.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. So that was a little goof up there, but yeah, we're missing the Lonely Man theme, but other than that, I think it especially the first one captures that flavor of the show. What did you think?
Yeah, I felt the same way. It was like, yeah, you really could see these turned into the TV show. They were, by the way, credit-wise, this was produced by Arthur Korb, who was a name you saw in a lot of other Power Records. And in an unusual move, you actually see a writer credited. There's someone named W.K. Wells is credited as the writer. I don't know who that is. I assume it was a Peter Pan employee. Most of these things were done in-house, but it's unusual that the writer actually got credit. And clearly, Mr. or Miss Wells was trying to ape the TV show, because you're right, you could picture these four stories expanded and turned into episodes from the TV show, because they are the Hulk wandering into town with his fake name, and he runs afoul of some local trouble, whether it's the guy running the scam, the guy who's like cheating the family. I did have to laugh in the first story, Black Chasm, where he meets the woman and her name's Betty.
Yeah.
It's always Betty. You know, I can't get away from it. It's always, can't be any other name. Couldn't be Darlene or something. It's gotta be Betty. I'm trying to get away from Betty. I do have to wonder what would the point be in making these records, making these stories match up to the TV show? Why would that make the record, like, why did Power Records care? What difference does that make to them? And I would think in an audio, you've got audio only, the sky's the limit. Like, why not have him fight the Abomination or the Rhino or the Leader? Like, why not just go nuts? Like, why make them match the TV show? Because it's not like the TV show is like CBS is going to like share money with Power Records. You know what I mean? Like, I could see if it was, nowadays where everything's coordinated, you know, enough, no one merchandiser is just kind of off on their off the reservation on their own. I could see even more, you know, more connected, where like one company would say, hey, let's pair up with this company to do this. But everybody was just doing whatever they wanted at this point in the comic book merchandising. So I don't know what the point would be in making these stories a little on the dull side. And unfortunately, I think they kind of are. I like the Hulk, but he did like in the TV show, he doesn't show up enough. It's mostly Bruce Banner doing stuff. And then like Hulk shows up once. Everybody's like, I think I saw a monster. That's impossible. And then that's it. I'm like, okay. Like, I don't know.
I guess it was just, you know, maybe the Hulk at Bay didn't sell that well. And then they saw, well, okay, this version of the Hulk's really popular. So let's just stick with that formula. But yeah, it does. I mean, you know, the Hulk doesn't talk, like he normally does in the comics. And, you know, the limitations of the TV show, you're right. I mean, they can have the Hulk out in outer space if they want to.
Yeah.
You know, he can fight the glob or something, you know.
That would have been great.
Yeah, I mean, I had that Marvel Superheroes reprint of that book. That's what popped in my head. But Herb Trippy again. But, you know, they could go all out. But I guess they you know, they never did that. Like, they didn't, like, do that with Superman. They didn't, like, make a, like, the, you know, the upcoming Superman 78 comic in Power Records form. They, you know, they kept, when they did the Man from Krypton, it still looked like the comic book Jor-El and the comic book Krypton. You know, they didn't try to ape the Superman movie or the Linda Carter TV show, or, you know, it is kind of weird that they went this low key with the Hulk, just because the TV show did out of necessity, and because Kenneth Johnson really just didn't like the, you know, the crazier aspects of the comics, you know. So I don't know. It is really strange when you think about it.
Yeah. And also, isn't it odd that none of the Marvel Power Records characters meet each other? Like, the Marvel universe was all about interconnectivity, and yet, you know, like, they could have done that. They could have gotten, you know, Spider-Man meets the Hulk. I mean, they were all writing original adventures. I know that we're kind of talking about what they didn't do as opposed to what they did do. Yeah. But it just seems so interesting to me that, like, I think Power Records, as we've talked about when they did Batman, like, they did some of the great Batman stories. Yeah. And yet for these Marvel ones, they seem kind of reserved a little for some reason. Like, I don't know why they did that. But I said, I don't mean to trash these things. I did enjoy them. They are fun to listen to because Power Records had a sort of a floor that they didn't really sink below. I mean, there are no Power Records that we've listened to that I've ever heard that I genuinely dislike, that I don't think are, like, good in any way. But they're just kind of like, okay, they're okay. And you're right. Maybe the Hulk at Bay was one of their lesser sellers. So they were like, all right, well, he's got a TV show. Let's try that. And maybe this didn't sell either. And they were like, all right, kids don't want the Incredible Hulk in audio form. I don't know. So, you know, like I said, those are the first two stories from this record to get it, Black Chasm, Monster from the Deep. Maybe we'll do another Hulk episode at some point, catching up on the other stories. And for all we know, keep discovering things with Power Records. Maybe there's a whole other Hulk record out there we've never even seen.
Yeah, never maybe. And maybe in that one, McGee shows up. Because I kept waiting for McGee to show up. It's like, where's McGee? That's who we need in this story. It's like, you know, we just need McGee walking up saying, I heard there was a cave-in at a mine and somebody saw a monster. And then Banner just like, woo, you know, and it's like, oh, I got to get out of here, you know, and takes off. I mean, that, you know, just him showing up at the end would be enough, since this is an abbreviated story. But I just, you know, I always liked it. You know, I mean, that character McGee, when, you know, I always think back to the one where they're trapped in the woods together and David's face is all bandaged up. You know, that's a great one. Yeah. So I would like to have seen him pop in here. So, but yeah, maybe we'll find, maybe he's in the other. I haven't listened to the other two stories in a while, so I don't think he's in them, but, you know.
No, he does not show up.
He doesn't show up. Ah, dang nabbit. We don't get the leader and we don't get McGee and Thunderbolt Ross or no.
The one thing that I'm really searching for is, I mentioned earlier that they did the Hulk and Wonder Woman and Spider-Man and Superman on cassettes. They put them out on cassettes, and they packaged them with these really kind of slick-looking die-cut cards, which, as you know, Chris, as a graphic designer, I'm a graphic designer, die-cut costs more money.
Mm-hmm.
But they make the extra effort to do it. And the only one I've ever been able to find a picture of is the Wonder Woman one. And you can look at the artwork, and it's her with her magic lasso, and it's kind of this kind of nice die cut. It's clearly drawn by somebody probably in-house, again, at Peter Pan Records. It's no recognizable style from the comic books. But it makes me want to find these other ones because I wonder what the Hulk card looks like. Mm. And then even more bafflingly, the Hulk cassette was packaged – they did dual packs, and the Hulk was packaged with Superman, while Spider-Man was packaged with Wonder Woman. What?
Like, bet you DC and Marvel love that.
Yeah, like what? That seems like purposely perverse, like to do that. I don't know. I mean, we know that back then that was kind of the last vestige of being able to smoosh these characters together. We talked about that on a For All Merchkind segment on my For All Mankind show, where we talked about the
light brights.
Oh, the light brights. Yeah. That's like, this is one of the last things of Marvel and DC being paired together. But yeah, I really want to find the Hulk Superman in the package just to own it. I'll never listen to it because I don't have a cassette player anymore, but I really want to own it because I just want to see what it looks like.
Jim Shooter was in the checkout aisle of IGA in 1983 and saw that cassette with Superman and the Hulk and said, JLA Avengers is dead.
He hit the roof.
He hit the roof and come in and said, kill it. And thousands of fanboys cried in their sleep.
True. I never quite got over that. So yeah, everybody, those are two stories featuring the Incredible Hulk. We'd love to hear what you think about these two audio adventures. But so as we're wrapping up here, let's get to the feedback from the previous episode of the Power Records podcast, which we talked about Kojak. We were really changing things up here at the Power Records podcast. We were talking about the Kojak stories. So we're going to get right to the comments from the website, which is, of course, firewaterpodcast.com. First up is our pal, Dr. Ange, who says, while driving into work on this cold Sunday morning, I got to listen to the show. Amazing. A Kojak power record. I, of course, knew about Kojak growing up. I saw commercials, of course, and the fact that he was bald and confident seemed to be unique in the 70s. In college, A&E, or some such channel, showed repeats in the afternoon, and occasionally my roommate would watch. One episode, Kojak used pretty brutal racist terms while questioning an African-American. Insanity. Anyways, this record is crazy with its casual violence. And while in the second story, Kojak says the perp got what he deserved, I was surprised that both stories talked about victimless white-collar crime, as if Kojak was okay with some criminals while others deserved to be gunned down. Lastly, I have to laugh at Chris's comment about Players Club. Again, while in college, Savalas was in a commercial about that card and how you got access into clubs, casinos. To this day, my group of friends will say, clubs, casinos, when we talk about where we should meet. Thanks again.
We got to start a Fire and Water Players Club, I think.
Oh, for Dr. man, yeah.
Players Club, baby.
I like to think that the Fire and Water Podcast Network is a Players Club, but, you know, okay.
There you go. Our buddy Ed O'Boznar wrote in to say, absolutely fascinating show. Like many, I'm sure, I find it astonishing that there was a Power Records production featuring Kojak. And after listening to them, I have to say, I don't think they're bad. They're just not for little kids at all. As Chris, I think, noted, they sound more like radio dramas meant for a considerably older audience. And while I didn't watch much Kojak either in its first run, I have some very vague memories of my older siblings watching it on our old black and white TV set or in reruns. I think the stories here definitely correspond to what one would see on the show. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if these had been adapted from actual episodes. Yeah, I think that's one thing. Apparently Power Records was good at getting the feel of a TV show because they just nailed the Incredible Hulk and they apparently nailed Kojak. So they had that down apparently.
Yeah. Maybe they had some of their writers had some TV experience or something and they were good at that or something. I don't know. But did you ever have a black and white TV, Chris? I'm just sort of curious. That's sort of I'm old enough that when you bought like little mini TVs for kind of like your kitchen, they were a lot of often they were black and white.
Yep, we had a black and white TV. It was in my sister's room. And when we got the Atari, my mom famously had read, I think I've mentioned this before, but she had famously read in some, you know, woman's magazine that those video games consoles can burn a pattern into your screen. So she wouldn't let us hook the Atari up to the big TV. We had to, I played all my Atari games in black and white. And wow. We still had that black and white TV when I got my Nintendo. And I was like, for the love of God, Mom, this has awesome graphics. Don't make me plug it into that black and white TV. You know, all right. You know, so yeah.
How can I play Adventure in black and white? I can't tell what little cube is me in the screen and stuff.
Spider-Man was in different shades of gray climbing up that damn building to fight the Green Goblin.
Man. Oh, it's so sad. Oh,
E.T. was gray falling into that pit he couldn't get out of. Yeah.
Yeah, my first TV that I had in my room was a black and white set because they were cheaper.
Yeah.
They were cheaper. And nowadays, people, TVs are like nothing. But back then, it was still a bit of an expenditure. So, yeah, I had a black and white set. It feels like a million years ago at this point.
Yep.
Brian Rosen simply says, a Kojak power record? Who listens to you, baby? We do, in all caps. Well, thank you, Brian.
Well, thank you, yes. Captain Entropy wrote in to say, two observations inspired by this episode. One, as Matt and Chuck point out, the way we watch TV was different then, and kids got exposed to some mature themes. I wonder which way is better, watching TV with your parents, seeing this stuff, and then talking with them about it, or having reality filtered by Disney Channel and Nickelodeon. Good question. Number two, man, New York was rough in the 70s. I don't know firsthand, but this episode reminds me of the stories people have told me. I think maybe you couldn't tell a contemporary story set in New York without dealing with some of this grit and grime. Not without coming across as inauthentic. You can't see me, but I'm sheepishly raising my hand. Consider me a volunteer. I would listen to more Kojak. So there you go. We can do a Kojak sequel. Oh, and we can also do a $6 Million Man sequel because I watched this. I'm on a Bigfoot kick. I watched the $6 Million Man.
He's not the Hulk, Chris. Not the
Hulk. I know he's not the Hulk, but he was Andre the Giant, and $6 Million Man was fighting him in the woods. And that way I can do my $6 Million Man George W. Bush impersonation again.
Marvelous. So, maybe we'll do a TV episode, like one Kojak and one $6 Million Man, like smoosh them together.
Ooh, that'd be fun. Like we'll click channels in between.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Maybe we'll do something. Let us know if you want us to do that. Like change it up like that, everybody.
But we got it's the 70s, so we got to get up and actually turn the knob. So.
Yeah, that's right. I get up, walk across the room, turn the knob. Yeah, you get that fuzz in the middle. Oh, it's just. Rob McCarthy says, as a big Kojak fan, I can say this is a lot more like Kojak than Star Trek was like Star Trek. That's a good observation, Rob. Right down to assuming we know what the hell policy is. I didn't know that until I read Langston Hughes at 25. But man alive, it's a great show. It's my second favorite 70s cop show. It's not as good as the original Hawaii 5-0, but nothing is. Wow. I've never seen Hawaii 5-0. Boy, Rob.
Oh, really? I used to love the theme song. I
know the theme song, but I never saw the show.
I got lost after a while, but I mean, we watched it when I was a kid. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I watched whatever my parents watched back then. Like, I had TV, like, it's on Saturday mornings and in the afternoons before the news came on. And then after that, my parents determined what we watched on TV. So.
Yeah, you just watch a lot of – whatever your parents watch is what you watch generally. But, yeah, some Hawaii 5-0 is one of the shows I just missed. It just – it didn't – it was off TV by the time I was really watching television. It didn't air in rerun. So – but apparently Rob McCarthy's a big fan. Maybe there's a power record of Hawaii 5-0 out there. You never know.
So there's a drawing of Jack Lord's awesome hair somewhere.
That great chin he had and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Matt Saroyce says, the 70s. When we grew up watching monster movies on Saturday mornings – raise his hand. Violent westerns in the afternoons and cops and robbers shooting it out on TV. If you missed any of it, you could listen to it via Power Records and see it in the accompanying comic book or visualize it in the theater of the mind. No one worried too much about how these rampaging monsters or gun-crazy criminals impacted our little brains. And why should they? At their hearts, they were all little morality plays where right was right and wrong, you got riddled with bullets of righteousness. Seems like we all turned out okay. I think you're assuming facts, not evidence, Matt, but I appreciate what you're saying.
Charles Coletta, oh, Charles Coletta instead of Chuck, Charles fancy. Coletta, fancy, says, great episode. As for the violence in the Kojak episodes, I don't really see that as a big deal for kids in this 1970s. With fewer channels and choices, most families watch their one TV in the home together as a unit. He's making the point I made a minute ago. Kids weren't as shielded from the harsh realities of life as they are now. Heck, lots of kids watch the Norman Lear sitcoms, MASH and other fare with no problem. I did. When I was a kid, Three's Company was the one sitcom we weren't allowed to watch. In the 1980s, kids were a big part of the Golden Girls audience, despite some racy moments. Thanks, Blanche. We watched, I remember watching Three's Company, and I had no idea. I remember, like, some other, like, kids, like coming up. I was like, what's a Tinkerbell? You know? And they're like, you know, of course, I'm sure they use terminology that no one would want anybody to use nowadays. No. And the Tinkerbell comment was not anything, you know, but that was Mr. Roper, what he was calling Jack. I remember those things. My parents probably shouldn't have been letting me watch Three's Company, but there I was.
I said, I've told before, my parents let me watch the original Saturday Night Live, like the original 5 years of that show, the Belushi Aykroyd years, and that's all kinds of stuff I shouldn't have been seeing, but
definitely
they watch. They let me stay up. Boy, Chuck mentions something. He mentions MASH, of course. Boy, would I have killed for some MASH Power Records.
Oh man.
Would have died out on those things.
I wonder how they would have got the actors' voices. Would they try to get their voices down, or, you know, or approximated them? That would have been interesting.
Oh, God, just to figure out. Oh, I'm so excited just thinking about it. thanks for putting that idea in my head, Chuck. Brian Linton says, thanks for another great episode, gentlemen. As a kid back in the late 70s, early 80s, I knew about Kojak, even though I never watched an episode of the show. Now I'm wondering how I knew about the character back then. I have a vague memory of a Kojak-like puppet-slash-Muppet character, complete with trademark lollipop, but I can find no evidence on the internet of such a children's character ever existing. Perhaps Kojak was just part of the zeitgeist during that time period. Yeah, I mean, he absolutely was. We talked about it on the show. I didn't watch Kojak, but I knew what it was. And, of course, we referenced that supposed appearance he was going to make in the original Mario Puzo script for Superman, where it was going to be this horrible Kojak joke. But, I mean, that's how big Kojak was. He was considered that much of a popular character that you could work him into a Superman movie for a gag. He was that big of a deal. So, yeah, I think you just pop culture osmosis.
Yeah. There's some more on the Muppet situation. Jay says, I too have vague memories of the Kojak Muppet, and Savalas himself did cameo in the 1979 Muppet movie.
Yeah, he did.
I think the Muppet might have been part of the Sesame Street crew, probably in the 1970s when the cop series itself was on. I went looking online, and the closest direct homage I could find was a character from 1990 named Smelly Tavales, who looked nothing like Kojak, but did look a little like Savalas from the Muppet movie. There is a Dragnet parody Muppet called Sergeant Thursday, who debuted in 1972. And then Matt Soros continued, I don't recall a Kojak puppet, but I do remember an Electric Company sketch. Morgan Freeman was Sherlock Holmes, another actor was Kojak, and a third was Columbo. They sang a song with the refrain, Who Done It? The Kojak character recites the line, Don't let this lollipop fool you, and the Columbo character expressed his fixation on a shoe. I always love it when the Electric Company comes up, and of course there's an Electric Company Power Record.
That's right.
With Spider-Man, and with Morgan Freeman, so we need to get to that one too.
That is some very specific stuff, Matt. I don't remember. I watch Electric Company, but I don't remember any of that. But man, yeah, that is. Imagine doing a Columbo joke on a kid show. Like, again, that's how famous Columbo was. That's really amazing.
Yeah.
No, I don't remember the puppet at all or anything like that. But I do remember Telly in the Muppet movie. Certainly remember that. So, yeah. David Escutierrez says, thank you both for unearthing and sharing this. And then he also talks about Kojak subbing for Luthor. So you're welcome, David. Yeah, it was one of the, again, I think I say this every episode, one of the fun parts of being a Power Records collector / just fan is unearthing stuff that you never would have guessed existed. And so I always hold out hope that there's more things out there that we don't know about.
Mike Bridges says, I did not realize this was a book and record. I was only aware of the LP, which is what I had when I was a kid. Honestly, I don't remember much about it. I don't really know much about the Kojak TV show. I'll be 50 this year, and it may have been before my time. It isn't on in reruns anywhere, and I would like to see it. As for the podcast, I enjoyed hearing these for what was probably the first time. As a kid, I found it boring. I mean, after all, as a kid, I would much rather listen to Hulk, Spider-Man, Batman, or Planet of the Apes. I wonder how many kids at the time actually bought this record. That's a good question. I wonder what the sales were on this.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, he got – think about this. Kojak got more full-length Power records than the Hulk did. He got two. Hulk got one. What is wow. – that is – that is amazing. Paul Wildenberger says, this Kojak Power record brings to mind episodes of old radio programs in the 40s and 50s. The stories would fit right in with episodes of Boston Blackie, Dragnet, Nick Carter, or yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Like you and many of your listeners, Kojak ran when I was very young. I can't say I ever watched the show, but Telly Savalas' image, trademark lollipop, and catchphrase, who loves you, baby, were recognizable pop culture references well into the 80s. During the second story, I half expected Rob to pick up the needle when the ex-wife was killed. That punk just shot Lady Cop? I don't ever interrupt the Power Records for any reason. B, yeah, there should have been a Lady Cop TV series, and there should have been Lady Cop Power Record. I mean,
yes.
Would have been perfect.
And then Marvel could have done Night Nurse, and, you know.
Yeah, that was, you know, women, girls listen to records, too. I mean, you know, come on. Liz Ann Oswald says, wow, I used to joke about this as a running gag. Never thought y'all would do a Kojak Power Record. See, don't tempt us, Liz Ann. That was awesome. Was grinning ear to ear through the whole podcast. Can't wait to hear the next one. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. Lindsay L. Werner wrote in to say, so given the whole Doctor Strange thing, it may not surprise you to read that I listen to a lot of old-time radio. This kind of reminded me of some old detective radio shows from that era, and something occurred to me as a result. What if Power Records were aiming for two audiences? Power Records came out in the 70s and 80s, so parents and grandparents may well have grown up on radio shows from the 40s and 50s before they were replaced by television. That might explain why some of them are so dark. They were trying to do what the Batman cartoon in the 90s succeeded at, catered to both children and their parents. That's a really good point, and maybe there was something to that, because I know that, you know, there were, you know, reissues of old radio shows in the 70s. My dad had tapes of The Shadow and Green Hornet,
yeah.
Lone Ranger, and there had been records and stuff before. So there was a market for that type of stuff. So she could be, Lindsay could be on to something.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It makes a lot of sense, actually. Or appealing to, you know, they know that, you know, the parents would buy the records for their, certain records for their kids, and then see that other things were available. But it was kind of safe enough for kids that you could sort of get away with it. And again, we keep talking about the man thing and stuff. I mean, so obviously, you know, they were trying to appeal to a limited but still slightly broader audience than just doing like little kids. And we all know Power Records is stuff for little kids, too.
Oh, yeah.
They did like Frosty the Snowman and Rudolph and Strawberry Shortcake and things like, you know, maybe not Strawberry Shortcake, but, you know, like really little kids stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they were trying to appeal to everybody. That's a really great observation, Lindsay. Thank you. So that's going to do it for the comments for the previous episode. Again, if you want to leave a comment on this episode, just go to our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You can go follow the network on Twitter at FW Podcast, and you can subscribe to this show, the Power Records Podcast, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. And then, of course, if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW Podcast, and there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name-checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to David Branning, R.W. Lovejoy, David S. Gutierrez, and Gord Tolton. Thank you very much, boys. So, Chris, that's going to do it for another episode of the Power Records Podcast. I promise we'll be back sooner than we were the last time. I promise. I mean it.
And let us know what you want to hear. Do you guys want to hear more TV show? Do you want to hear a $6 million man Kojak double feature? Or is there another one we haven't gotten to yet? Do you want an all $6 million man show? Let us know. More Space 1999. You know, we'll go find Brian Hyler and bring him back on. So let us know, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, let us know what else you would like to hear. So thanks, everybody, for listening. That's going to do it for this episode of the Power Records Podcast. Until the next episode, drop the needle.
And turn the page.
Come, Robin. Into the Batmobile and home.